Catching you up on local news, over the weekend, North Carolina surpassed 5,000 total deaths from COVID-19. There are now more than 1,600 residents in the hospital with the virus, too. That's also a new record. Speaking to the media today, Governor Roy Cooper did not impose any additional restrictions, but he did tighten the state's mask mandate, and he also offered a stark warning for North Carolina.
We are in danger. This is a pivotal moment in our fight against the coronavirus. Our actions now will determine the fate of many.
State health officials have updated the county alert map, moving 10 more counties into the red zone for having critical levels of community spread. Alamance is now one of those counties. Chatham County has also been moved into the orange zone for having substantial community spread. Durham, Orange, and Wake counties remain in the yellow zone. In addition to urging everyone to limit or put off Thanksgiving plans, State Health Secretary Dr. Mandy Cohen also urged everyone to keep following those basic precautions. Wash your hands regularly, stay 6 feet apart, and wear that mask when you're out.
Masks work. They protect people around you, and they can give you the protections as well. As Chef Chidi Kumar from Garland said last week when she was with us, act as if you could have COVID and could be contagious. Wear a mask, wait 6 feet apart, and wash your hands often. Don't lose hope. We are so close. The Food and Drug Administration is reviewing data on the first vaccine right now to confirm that it's safe and can prevent people from getting this virus. Until then, I know we can do our part to protect each other. Whatever your reason, get behind the mask.
Dr. Mandy Cohen speaking there. With case numbers and hospitalizations still on the rise, public health officials are urging residents to avoid travel for Thanksgiving and celebrate only with your immediate households. 97.9 The Hill's Al Karras spoke with an infectious disease expert at UNC about how to gather safely this holiday season.
Dr. Emily Sickbert-Bennett is an epidemiologist and an expert on infectious diseases. As Director of Infection Prevention at UNC's Medical Center, Sickbert-Bennett has helped lead the effort to keep UNC Health's patients and staff safe during the pandemic. While she knows the winter holiday season is marked and defined by gatherings of family and friends, Sickbert-Bennett said we need to approach those traditions differently this year.
As we see in our state and in our communities, our COVID cases are at an all-time high. We're carefully watching our hospitals to be sure that they don't reach capacity. And COVID transmission won't halt for the holidays.
This weekend, the country passed 12 million cases, adding 1 million new cases in the past week alone. In the Tar Heel State, the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services reported 4,514 new cases on Sunday, the highest number of new cases in a single day since the beginning of the pandemic. The latest virus surge began accelerating across the country in mid-October. It took just over 2 weeks for the nation to go from 8 million cases to 9 million on October 30th. Going from 9 to 10 million took only 10 days. From 10 million to 11 took just under 7 days. As we head into peak holiday season, Sickbert-Bennett said she is worried about increased spread. She said many features of our loved traditions, like prolonged indoor meals, multiple households coming together, and the inability to wear masks while partaking in food and drink, will only offer more opportunities for transmission. If you are choosing to gather in person this holiday season, Sickbert-Bennett said a negative COVID-19 test doesn't mean you should skip other prevention measures.
So even if you do have a negative test, it absolutely does not negate doing all of the other prevention measures that are important. Wearing a mask, physical distancing, avoiding crowds and in indoor areas, washing your hands frequently.
She said a negative test only gives you information about a single point in time and does not mean that you will remain negative after that test.
And so this can be very worrisome, and we certainly have seen instances in the community and in the hospital setting where a negative test has given individuals a false sense of security, and they've not paid attention to the onset of new signs and symptoms, thinking, I tested negative 2 days ago, this must be nothing.
Additionally, when planning a family meal, Sickbert-Bennett said the risk of transmission is still there even if your meal is held outside. She said risks accumulate from the number of people you involve, the amount of time you spend with each other, spacing, and the ability to practice prevention strategies.
Just holding it outdoors, I think, does not negate the importance of really thinking through carefully what's the right number of people. Certainly, making sure that you're adhering to all the state guidance on number of gatherings, but a number of people at a gathering. But even the lower the numbers, the less risks, the less contact you have. Spending shorter amounts of time is safer than longer amounts of time. And then also continuing to adhere to those prevention strategies. If you're not actively eating or drinking, keeping your mask on, even in an outdoor space, is much safer than not wearing your mask.
More local and state guidance on how to safely participate in holiday gatherings this year can be found on chapelboro.com. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Elle Karras.
The pandemic has forced yet another holiday event to cancel, Pittsburgh's annual Christmas parade officially off for this year. Turning to other news, family, friends, and community members gathered on Saturday, outdoors and masked up, of course, to remember James Lewis Cates, a black man who was murdered on UNC's campus exactly 50 years ago. 97.9 The Hill's Brighton McConnell was there.
Saturday's march began at the Hargraves Community Center in Chapel Hill's Northside neighborhood, where James Lewis Cates grew up. Reverend Robert Campbell, who was a friend of Cates as young men, began with a word of prayer.
Let us become that voice that reckons with the injustice. Not only here in this community, remembering a young age Afro-American man that lost his life, but we cannot forget all the lives that have been lost since then.
Living relatives of Cates then led a candlelight walk to the St. Joseph CME Church on the street corner, the same place where a funeral service was held 50 years ago. The 22-year-old Cates died on November 21, 1970, after being stabbed by members of a white supremacist biker gang. The group from out of town had stabbed another black man earlier in the evening before arriving at an all-night dance party at UNC's Student Union. A fight broke out between the bikers and black community members, which ended with Cates on the ground bleeding profusely. No one was ever convicted for killing the 22-year-old. From St. Joseph, the group on Saturday walked with their candles to Franklin Street and headed to the Peace and Justice Plaza. Along the way, some participants chanted Cates' name. Some shared other messages.
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
And even others sang.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine.
At the Peace and Justice Plaza, a photograph of Cates, flowers, and messages to the family sat in display. Some relatives of Cates spoke to the crowd, urging people to continue working to address systemic racism and injustice within the greater Chapel Hill community. Terrence Fouché, a cousin of Cates and a son of local state senator Valerie Fouché, was one of those to speak. He said while Chapel Hill may feel like a progressive bubble in the South, his own experience reflects how all community members must be involved in addressing racism and injustice.
And although Chapel Hill has afforded me a lot of opportunity, my mom still taught me caution, still taught me perspective to understand that my skin is still sometimes something that people see as an issue, as something to be feared. And I've always had to have that double consciousness and understand that lens of myself being a Chapel Hillian and an American, but also as a black man.
One way Cates' story will be moving forward, the town of Chapel Hill, UNC, the Center for Study of the American South, and Cates' family members are now working to properly document the circumstances around the 22-year-old's murder. Doing so will help share Cates' story more, but will also work to address systemic racism of Chapel Hill's past. Danita Mason-Hogans, a community member who helped conduct Saturday's remembrance, said she believes this collaboration will be fruitful. She said she's hopeful the broader community can now begin to move toward more equity, with Cates' story at the center.
I think the voice that has been missing up until this time has been the community and also the family. And we often find that when we reevaluate social justice issues, the people who experience a lot of this pain don't have the resources that they need in order to tell these stories. And so when we look at history, we also have to look at it through a social justice lens.
More information regarding Cates' life and death can be found on the Chapel Hill Community History website. We also have a photo gallery from Saturday's march on chapelboro.com. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Brighton McConnell.
Congrats to three Chapel Hill residents who just won state-level awards from Special Olympics North Carolina. Annie Tain won the Billy Quick Athlete Leadership Award for her advocacy work. Markel Corwin won the Rob Williams Award for sportsmanship in tennis. And Kwame Alston won the Athlete of the Year Award to honor 15 years of involvement in Special Olympics. If you recognize that name, we also recognized Alston earlier this year as a WCHL hometown hero. Congrats to Charles Lovelace, the outgoing director of the Moorhead Cane Foundation. He was just awarded the Order of the Longleaf Pine, the highest honor for state service bestowed by the governor. Lovelace has been Moorhead Cane's executive director since 1987. He's stepping down next summer. Time now for sports, brought to you this hour by Franklin Street Realty. Well, after months of delays, high school sports are back in action across North Carolina, including right here in Chapel Hill, where 97.9 The Hill's Dakota Moyer covered one of the first matches of the fall. He filed this report.
The scene at Smith Middle School on Tuesday for the Chapel Hill versus Cedar Ridge varsity volleyball match was unlike anything high school athletics in North Carolina has seen before. Athletes wore masks at all times, even during play. Spectators were barred from the gym. Parents watched along via a Facebook Live feed being streamed from a phone. Here's what Chapel Hill High School Athletic Director Tim Bennett said about the event.
It's strange. It's different. But it's right now the right thing for us to do.
High school athletics have now resumed in Orange County and across North Carolina with an untraditional schedule due to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. While normally fall is a vibrant scene for high school athletics, only volleyball, field hockey, and cross country have been cleared to resume competition by the North Carolina High School Athletic Association. Chapel Hill head coach Ross Field said his team is still getting adjusted, having been hampered by COVID-19 restrictions in the offseason. Without any summer team workouts or scrimmages against other teams, his program may not be as prepared as usual for a season.
Usually we have months. We have all summer where we can have open gyms, workouts. Once we make it to the teams, then we have 2 weeks before we even play a match where we get to play a big scrimmage day where we'll play five matches that day against all different kinds of teams.
Once the season finally got started, also came the multitude of restrictions in place to ensure the safety of players, coaches, and officials. Field said they were given a guideline of restrictions by the state's High School Athletic Association, which the county then modified and added additional safety precautions to. For volleyball, the balls were wiped down between sets and individual chairs were placed 6 feet apart on the sidelines. When teams gathered for a timeout, players distanced themselves from each other. Field said they were inspired by what universities had done with their own sports teams.
We were inspired by a lot of the universities. We looked at their bench area, how does it play out? We told with our players, and especially with the masks, that local university like UNC Chapel Hill had been wearing masks the entire time in volleyball. So we told them, hey, we're just like them.
While volleyball, field hockey, and cross country are the only sports active in Orange County right now, others are right around the corner. Basketball and cheerleading workouts have resumed, and the first practices for swimming and diving are set to begin this week. For now, COVID-19 restrictions and safety precautions will be in place in Chapel Hill and Orange County. That includes athletes wearing masks at all times, even during competition. Field said, although it's strange, it's something everyone will have to get used to.
Definitely everyone in masks, that's something they're still getting used to, but everyone has that same weird thing that everyone's just trying to adjust to.
Yeah. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Dakota Moyer.
UNC football was off this past weekend, but the Tar Heels still moved up in the national rankings back into the AP Top 25 at number 25, and also up one spot in the coaches' poll to number 23. UNC is back in action this Friday, hosting number 2 Notre Dame, and UNC has announced that Bo Corrales, Storm Duck, and Brian Anderson may be back in action for that game. They've been out, but they could be back. That'll be a game-time decision. Well, don't forget to make sure your calendars are marked for this Wednesday, a couple of days from now, when college basketball season finally gets underway. Tar Heel women hosting Radford at 1 p.m. and the men host College of Charleston at 6. We'll have that game for you right here on 97.9 The Hill. Of course, COVID-19 is already affecting the season even before it begins. Gardner, Webb, and Duke were set to play their season opener on Wednesday, but that game has been postponed already because someone with Gardner, Webb came down with the virus.